Hello and welcome back to Wrestling Talk 102 with Phil Stevens. This is episode 1D, as in Delta. Past few episodes, we have touched on WrestleMania week. I've kind of been jumping around a little bit here with where I'm covering stuff. I went a little bit out of order, and I noticed that yesterday after I did part C. So we've done WrestleMania night one. We've done WrestleMania night two. We have done NXT TakeOver Stand and Deliver night one and night two as well. And I did skip over AEW from last week, which I do want to dive into a little bit here. Just kind of go through what was what we have had happening in the land of All Elite. So Dynamite started out with, instead of the Pinnacle showing up, looking all flashy, it ended up being Inner Circle after they attacked the Pinnacle the week before in the locker room and literally just beat the shit out of them to a lot of people's enjoyment. So they all showed up in black cars, and Jericho kind of came in, I guess from stage right, to jump in front of all the other cars in his black car. So that was a nice little visual to start the night. And I really like where they're going with this feud between Pinnacle and the Inner Circle, all stemming from MJF's betrayal of Jericho and the Inner Circle. So yeah, it's only going to get better from here. So we had matches to kick it off. We had Hangman Adam Page versus Max Caster. And this was a great opening match. And with Max Caster, I mean, he's been kind of getting a little mini push lately on his own. He, of course, is one half of the Acclaimed with Bowens. So he was involved in the Grab the Brass Ring ladder match at the last pay-per-view. So he has, like I said, been getting somewhat of a push here. He's had quite a few wins. They mentioned that he's been beating members of the Dark Order I believe, probably either Elevation or AEW Dark. I really don't get into AEW Dark, to be honest with you. So I won't be reviewing that on this show. I generally tend to stick to stuff that's purely on TV and not stuff that I have to watch on YouTube. But this was a great back and forth match. They let Max Caster shine like he has been. And at one point, you know, I really thought he was going to pull it out. He hit Page with the boom box, and Page was able to actually kick out of it. So I didn't really think that a lot of people saw that coming. Actually, I apologize. It wasn't the boombox. It was the chain. The boombox was a distraction for Bowens to slide in the chain to Caster. So Page got hit in the face, and kicked out at the two, and then Max went to the top rope, looking for his huge elbow drop, but Page ended up rolling out of the way, only to finish a few moments later with the Buckshot Lariat. Went a little over 10 minutes, which is great for a TV show. I give the match 3.25 stars. I thought it did its job as a fun opener to get the limited crowd at Daly's Place really into the show to start. So again, Adam Page went over Max Caster in the opening bout. Then Tony Schiavone had an interview with the Death Triangle, and he started bringing up how they're going to be getting their shot at the tag team champs, and that was actually last night. I have yet to watch AEW from this week, so I won't be reviewing that today. I'll probably be doing that on Saturday. During the interview segment, the best friends ended up coming out, including Orange Cassidy and Chris Statlander. And Orange Cassidy brings up saying that they have unfinished business with the Death Triangle. So, fantastic. That could be a fun little thing with two little mini stables there. And I gotta say, I really like the stable wars in AEW. I mean, it's very New Japan to me, and it's just something that's fresh. We don't see enough of that in WWE, and so, you know, it seems like, you know, maybe every like week or two we get a new stable. Even some of these guys on AEW Darker have stables, so you know it's fun for what it is. Let's see. From there, we got to Inner Circle having an interview in the ring, and Jericho does what Jericho does, and that's kill it on the mic. And the long and short of this was them pretty much saying that the Inner Circle challenges the Pinnacle to a blood and guts match, which we didn't get last year. We ended up getting the Stadium Stampede, which I thought was very fun, and I thought really did what it needed to do. I think that they had to back off because of the pandemic. And, you know, talking about blood and guts, like, you know, there's probably going to be a lot of, you know, by the name, probably a lot of blood that was going to come from that match. So I think that's why they backed off from it. And I know it was also really hard for them to build to it with everyone around because the Bucks weren't around until, like, I think it was like the week before the Stampede or the Dynamite before. So kind of had to move on from there. To actually do the Stadium Stampede match, which the Elite ended up winning over the Inner Circle, and which actually gave us that great little that great little T-shirt that they made, that the Inner Circle made, saying that said Stadium Stampede champions, that normally would go to the, you know, people say they go to the foreign countries, the third world countries that don't have clothes. They send like championship loser t-shirts to those places. So that was a nice little touch there. But that blood and guts match is going to be on May 5th. So hopefully that's going to be, you know, hopefully that's going to be a good match. And a nice little war between, the two, I would say, two of the biggest stables in AEW. excuse me. From there, we went to, they called it the Godzilla versus Kong match. Bear Country versus Jurassic Express. I really like, I'm a big Jungle Boy guy. I really like Jungle Boy Jack Perry. Luchasaurus, he's fun. He's a fun big guy. Marco Stunt does his thing out there every so often. He's, you know, just their little buddy. Bear Country, I really haven't had a lot of exposure to, like I said, because I don't watch AEW Dark. I always read the spoilers, though. It seems like they have a good run there. I wouldn't say I had too much to report on this match. It really wasn't a pretty one. I don't really think it did anything for either team. Jurassic Express, though, won in just about 10 minutes. I'd give it like a star and a quarter or something like that. It just didn't do anything, I believe, for either team. Hopefully Jurassic Express, though, gets some sort of a run here soon. In like a stable war as well. We'll see, though. I mean, they were kind of doing things with the old Revival guys. I believe they're called the Revelation now. But now they're in the Pinnacle. So who knows if that's ever going to, like, come back around. So, yeah, that match was just there. It wasn't anything to write home about. Then we had a promo from QT Marshall, as Chris Jericho calls him. There's a few guys that he's got with him ever since the week prior they attacked Cody and the Nightmare Family. And all these guys were actually in the Nightmare Family. Of course, QT Marshall. We had Aaron Solo, who many people know and only know him as Bailey's ex-boyfriend. They're not together anymore. And they actually brought that to light here in this promo. They said that this guy isn't going to be known now as just somebody's boyfriend. So I thought that was a really cool cut or really cool touch. We had a little small promo from a Go-Go, who seems to be one of the guys they're going to really push with this. And so I believe he's been going on Dark as well. I haven't seen him in the ring, but I believe he was supposed to be on Dynamite this week. So I'll be watching that sometime today and getting an idea of how he is. And then, I can't remember what the name of the other guy is that was with them. But he's a big dude, though. I'm just not a watcher of AEW Dark. Maybe I'll have to take it up so I can figure out who some of these guys are before they hit AEW Dynamite. So from there we had a nice little interview with Sting, where of course Lance Archer interrupted again. Sting pretty much says that Archer is everything he says he is, and which is Archer saying that he's main event caliber, needs to be booked better, and Sting completely agrees. And Sting doesn't really understand why Archer just disappears after having main event matches with guys like Moxley. Yeah, it did its job. I don't know where they're going with this. If it's going to be Archer going against Sting, or maybe Archer going and getting a run with the TNT title eventually, because this might lead to him facing Sting's little buddy Darby Allin. So then we had a little promo in the back with Team Taz, and teasing maybe just a little bit of dissension still with the Machine Brian Cage. But Taz is pretty much, earlier in the show, he had, or maybe it was the week before, he had offered Christian Cage a spot in Team Taz. So they're just kind of talking about that. So We'll see where that goes. I mean, obviously, I don't think Christian Cage is going to join Team Taz. I don't know if he's going to be getting into stable wars at all. I think he'd be a good fit for the Inner Circle, though, because him and Jericho used to do crazy good stuff back in WWE. Back in, like, 2002, 2003-ish. when they were going against Stone Cold Steve Austin. That was always fun. Then we had a matchup for the TNT Championship, which was Darby Allin versus JD Drake. This is part of Darby Allin wanting to defend the title every week. And JD Drake, another guy from AEW Dark. I had never seen him in the ring, but here he is getting his debut. Because I had never seen him on Dynamite, so I'm guessing this was his debut. He's got a few guys with him. Cesar Bononi and then Hollywood Ryan Nemeth, who is, of course, Dolph Ziggler's brother. So like I said, they have little factions on AEW Dark as well. This match wasn't anything special. JD Drake, he's an okay big guy. He got some hits in, showed that he's got some charisma. But we knew the title wasn't going to change hands here. Darby ended up winning with the coffin drop, a little over 9 minutes. I guess I gotta take that back. It was a good showing from Drake, and I'd give it about 3 stars. It was good for the time allotted. Didn't cross over into that great territory, but it was a good first showing for him on AEW Dynamite. And then after the match, Darby actually got attacked by Butcher and Blade, and Matt Hardy and his HFO Hardy Family Organization, I believe is what he calls it, comes out, and this actually led to them booking Matt Hardy versus Darby for the TNT title for this week on Dynamite. So again, I'll be watching that sometime today. But after they attacked him, Sting and the Dark Order came out and helped Darby. The Bunny was actually left out there by herself. I forgot about, Ty Conti came out, and I love me some Ty Conti. I thought she was a fantastic talent in NXT. They really dropped the ball with her. She shows up over here. She's getting a push. She's ranked number one in the women's division. She's walking around, with the Dark Order. And just based on her partnership with Anna Jay, who's out right now due to injury. She was going to get a match with the Bunny tonight on this episode. And then we had a little bit here where Jericho is about to get interviewed in the back. And I think we all knew something was coming because the Pinnacle jumps him. And they had locked the Inner Circle in their locker room. So that was a nice little touch. And then they shot to the locker room and they're trying to break down the door. And then we got the Mike Tyson coming out. And he got some punches in on Sean Spears. And essentially helps the Inner Circle stave off the Pinnacle, which was, really fun. Mike Tyson's always a fun celebrity to have on, and him and Jericho seem to call a truce, and they're cool now. So we'll see where that goes. I believe he's going to be the special enforcer for Jericho versus, I think it's Dax Harwood. Or Cash, I can't remember which one Jericho's fighting tonight, but I think he's going to be the enforcer for it. Mike Tyson will be. excuse me. From there, we had a little promo with Dr. Britt Baker. Says she's been killing it and is ranked 4th. Says she needs a title shot, but I'm sure there's, 3 other girls that are a little more deserving than her, even though she did put on quite a good match in that unsanctioned match with Thunder Rosa a few weeks back. So I'm a big fan of Britt Baker. I at this point, I don't know who's taking the title off Shida, though. Hopefully it's Ty Conti, but I have a feeling in the end it will be Britt Baker. She does deserve a title run. Then we had a match between Ty Conti and the Bunny, which I previously said we were going to have. The Bunny, it's just kind of a weird thing. Allie is such a fun character. She had a really good character in Impact Wrestling or TNA, whatever you wanted to call it, when she was there. Had that angle with her real life husband, Braxton Sutter, who is now the Blade in AEW. And they're trying to push her now too in the women's division. I think they're really trying to get this division off the ground and running. It's kind of been stale for a while. I mean, you got girls there that can really go, but I just don't feel like they put enough emphasis on the women's division as a whole. Ty Conti ended up getting the win, though, over the Bunny, with her little hammerlock DDT. And so Ty Conti, I guess, retains her number one contendership for the women's title. Let's see. And then we had the main event, which was the Young Bucks and Jon Moxley versus the Good Brothers and Kenny Omega. This match, all it was to get the heel turn out of the Bucks. We really haven't seen where that's going to go, though. They do end up, they act in the match like they can't hurt Jon Moxley, like they don't have it in them to do it to him because he's their friend, so on and so forth. So Moxley goes in and says, like, screw you guys, I'm going to do this on my own. Hits two, I call them Death Riders. They're still calling them Paradigm Shifts, but I believe that the Death Rider is where he actually lifts them up, and it's the elevated Paradigm Shift. So I call them Death Riders. So he hits two on Omega and then puts on the choke, or the sleeper hold, I guess, whatever you want to call it that he does. And then the Young Bucks super kick him. And then Eddie Kingston runs down and says, like, dude, what the hell? And the Good Brothers get Eddie Kingston, who's injured right now as well. But bless him, he's still out there trying to get into the match, even with an injury. So, but anyway, Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers end up winning the match. After the match, the Good Brothers and Omega hold up Moxley, and the Young Bucks super kick him. And Omega holds the Too Sweet up, but Matt won't do it, and they all hug in the center of the ring. So who knows where they're going with this, with the Young Bucks? I have no idea. Maybe it will lead to something like a more serious turn for the Young Bucks to the dark side. But at this point, I really don't know. We'll just have to wait and see what transpires on this week's Dynamite. Let's see here. Okay, so now we are into this week, thank God. And usually, which is the best Raw of the year, so I'm going to jump into Monday Night Raw here. The Raw after WrestleMania. Usually we get the call-ups, debuts, stuff like that. I have to say this was a super, like, probably the worst Raw after Mania I've ever seen, and I'm just going to touch on some stuff here that happened. It just didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Kicked off with Lashley coming in and Riddle challenging him to a match, and Lashley pretty much slams Riddle's head into his scooter and says he's going to teach him a lesson. Which he ends up doing. He ends up pretty much killing Matt Riddle in the ring, winning with the Hurt Lock, It was actually the first match of the night. I mean, Lashley needed it. He needed another dominant victory, so I'm okay with that. Riddle, who knows what they're doing with this guy. Like I've talked about, I don't think that Matt Riddle was ever supposed to be United States champion. I think WWE was backed into a corner with Keith Lee getting injured. So, I think they're just off of Riddle right now, and hopefully they can bring him back maybe with some like Stallion Battalion stuff and go from there. But again, Lashley got the win. Just a little over 10 minutes of him beating the shit out of Riddle. Then they had a little interview with Rhea, talking about, because tonight, or on this show, she has a rematch with Asuka from the night before at WrestleMania, where Rhea won the title from Asuka. And she's a little pissed and little annoyed that she's getting, or that she's having to defend the title against Asuka the next night. But she says that we're all witnessing the brutal new order of the women's division. So we will see where this leads. We came back from break, and Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin in the ring, and then the Viking Raiders return. Eric and Ivar. I believe it was Ivar that's been out for about 7 months after his ill-fated dive, and I believe it was an 8-man tag on Raw one night. The Raiders look good. The team really doesn't do anything for me. If they were War Machine, if they could have just kept their name, I'd be okay with it. But they're not interesting to me. I think they got ruined by that whole thing with going bowling and golfing and whatever the hell they were doing with the Street Profits during the pandemic. Just wasn't good TV and didn't do anything for their characters. They needed to keep these guys as badasses. And unfortunately, when Ivar got hurt, Eric went into jobber territory and was treated as nothing. So, like, I mean, how do you show Eric on TV the week before, hanging out with those guys, or maybe it was 2 weeks before, hanging out with the guys in the locker room while McIntyre was trying to find who was going to take him out to get a shot at the title. And he does nothing. And then bring him back and say, oh, but the Viking Raiders are back. I almost said Viking Experience. if anyone remembers that whole debacle, that was pretty ridiculous. But poor Shelton and Cedric, nothing against the Viking Raiders. I just never really was big on them. They had some good matches, but their characters were simultaneously forced and not given enough foundation, I believe. But like I said, the Street Profits thing just soured them. Give the match, no, 1 star, didn't do anything. It was a little over 5 minutes. The Lashley match, I didn't rate, but 2 stars. It was just a extended squash. So, then they interviewed Asuka, saying that she's ready for Rhea now and everything should be okay and she should win her title back. And then when we come back from commercial break, we had Charlotte Flair making her way back, and she gives a pretty good promo, actually, talking and she's going heel again, which I think she does best at. And saying that Rhea Ripley was the ultimate opportunist, because she couldn't come to work. As everyone knows, she had, I'm pretty sure they said she did have COVID. There's a lot of rumors out there about what happened. I guess she also got a false like pregnancy report or something like that. But yeah, she's back now where she needs to be. So, she gave a very good promo talking about how she's not screwing around anymore and how she's pissed off that she missed WrestleMania, which she definitely should have been on the card if not for whatever ailed her, which, like I said, sounds like it was COVID. So but she says to enjoy the title match that she should have been in. So Rhea and Asuka went out, had a fun little 11-minute match. But in the end, Charlotte came out and caused a DQ at the end. And I think that she's going to be enjoying her heel persona more than when she was face. A lot of people say she has an annoying heel persona. Maybe she does. Whatever. Wasn't her dad meant to be annoying when he was a heel, back in the 80s and stuff? I would think so. It's just a woman doing it now. So she caused a disqualification. And then we came back with Miz and Morrison talking about Miz TV, which was coming up, and Maryse is going to be on it. And then Nia and Shayna are back in the back watching Mandy Rose fall at WrestleMania. And then Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke pretty much kick Nia's ass after Shayna leaves. So, yeah, apparently we're getting that match for the 1,000th time coming up. Then we got to Alexa's Playground, which after WrestleMania Night 2, Alexa cost The Fiend his match against Randy Orton. We don't really know what that's all about, but she starts off by telling a story here, saying that there was a girl who was lost until one day she was rescued by the darkness. The darkness protected her and nurtured her and taught her everything. Then the darkness went away. She wonders if when the little girl realized that she may have never needed the darkness. So she kind of points out that she found out that she could do everything on her own, so maybe she doesn't need the darkness. So nice little promo from her. And then she's got her own little fiend looking doll that looks like her, which the name is Lily. And Lily was sitting on a swing next to her. Then we went to the ring after that good promo from Miss Alexa, one of my favorite female performers. Miz and his wife are in the ring with Morrison, and they're talking about the debut of or the return of Miz or Miz and Mrs., which was Monday night after Raw. And then Damian Priest comes down and pretty much gives him shit for losing to Bad Bunny. And so then Miz and Morrison fight over who wants to face him. And then Maryse says, you guys can both face him. So we got a little 2-on-1 handicap match, which was absolutely nothing special. Miz and Morrison actually won, though. They beat Damian Priest. I don't think any one man should be winning against two man. But I also saw no point in having this match to begin with. And no amount of Maryse will make it okay. So from there, the star for showing up for the match. Good job. A little over 5 minutes. And then we had the British interviewer, the new guy, I can't remember his name, but he interviewed Nia and Shayna because apparently they are going to face Mandy and Dana Brooke for the 1,000th time here. And Nia actually trips going into the ring, and oh boy, now they're making an angle out of this. Oh my God, get ready. And they actually did a thing where Nia tripped trying to get up into the ring during the match. And then Dana and then she got all pissed off, and Dana and Mandy just decided to leave. Don't really understand what the whole point of it was. I'm not even going to give it a rating. It did nothing. I don't know if they're just trying to make Mandy feel better for what happened at WrestleMania when she fell down the entranceway, or when she slipped, I guess. But I mean, them just walking out, that it just doesn't make any sense. It was kind of a heelish thing for the team to do. You know, walking away from Nia after attacking her in the back. It made zero sense logically. Then we had MVP in the ring, and Drew came out and says Mania would come down to a few things: Claymore, Hurt Lock, and who makes the first mistake. MVP distracted him, and that's what it was. Drew says he pretty much wants his rematch. Then Braun Strowman comes out and says that he's next in line, that Drew lost. And then Randy Orton comes out, says he's done with The Fiend. He wants a match, so we end up booking a triple threat for later for the main event of the show. So, and the winner's going to face Lashley at Backlash. And I guess they're calling it WrestleMania Backlash this year. So, instead of just regular Backlash. Then after the break, we had Drew and Braun come in backstage, and Braun brings up his cage match. Drew, I'm sure, didn't mean this at all, but he told Braun, great match. And Braun pretty much says he's going to whoop Drew's ass tonight. Then we had Elias in the ring. And New Day interrupts. So I really don't know what the whole point of this was. He pretty much went in there one-on-two against two face guys in the New Day. I don't know what the heck happened to Jackson Ryker. But... you know, whatever, this match was never going to do anything. Elias sucks. Ryker sucks. It was what it was. I'll give him 2 stars just for, you know, being a heel in a handicap match. When he's the guy that's by himself. Then we had a nice little promo from Randy Orton, who says that he had been distracted for the past 6 months, and he's done with The Fiend. And then we actually return to the Firefly Funhouse. We actually have it back now, which is very cool. I'm a fan of The Fiend and Bray Wyatt thing. I don't know where they're going with it. Hopefully they can clear up this whole mess that we got at WrestleMania. It was kind of funny. The little witch in the room says that she hated Alexa and called her a bitch. Wyatt seems to be kind of acting like a face here. So this will be pretty interesting going forward. He says it's going to be a brand new him. He feels reborn. He says the Funhouse is going to be big, bad, and strong. Who knows what's going to happen there? So we'll have to wait till next week to see where they're going with this whole thing. A lot of people have predicted that maybe this leads to Bray Wyatt's real-life brother Bo Dallas coming back. But who knows? He's still employed by WWE. Maybe he comes back and works with Alexa Bliss and is maybe he's the scorched fiend, and then the actual fiend is Bray Wyatt. Who knows? Who knows where they're going with this? But hopefully they don't put too much thought into it, because this should be a simple thing to do. Back from the break, and we get Drew McIntyre versus Randy Orton versus Braun Strowman, and this was going to be for the number one contendership at WrestleMania Backlash. It was a fun little triple threat match. Not really surprising to me that Drew McIntyre went over, actually pinned Orton, which I thought was kind of weird that he pinned Orton. I thought they were actually going to do something with him after he got out of the Fiend feud, or he thinks he's out of the Fiend feud. Who knows? Maybe he's not yet. So Claymore to Randy Orton wins it for Drew McIntyre. And then after the match, Drew celebrating and MVP, his music hits, and then T-Bar and Mace show up and choke slam Drew McIntyre and then leave. I mean, it was the most anticlimactic thing I could think of. Are they working with MVP? Are they work, you know, like what are these guys doing? Why have they not taken their mask off? Retribution is apparently over. Dio Madden does not deserve to be on our TV. Dominik Dijakovic deserves to be on our TV without his mask and being Dominik Dijakovic. So I guess we'll have to wait and see. But MVP at the end of the show is just staring at the ring while McIntyre's down from a double choke slam. So I'm going to give that little triple threat match 3 stars. I thought it was fun. A little over 11 minutes. I wasn't too surprised by the result, but we'll see what happens going forward. Oh gosh. Okay, I have about 20 minutes left here. I think I can get through NXT, so I think we will be all caught up. So I can do this whole thing in 4 episodes. Okay, so we had the NXT after NXT TakeOver Stand and Deliver, which not my favorite takeovers ever, but it is what it is. it's just my opinion. Then, to start, we had Scarlett and Karrion Kross showing up, and Karrion Kross pretty much says he's a badass. Everyone's going to pay. Just gives a little promo, introducing himself as the new NXT champion. Love the character. I think Karrion Kross is what he needs to be. I don't think he's ever going to deliver really any awesome matches. Like, I don't think we're ever going to get a 5-star match out of him. But I think him and Scarlett are a fun little act. So, they were looking back at Stand and Deliver and did a lot of reviews of it. They said they're going to have an interview with Raquel Gonzalez tonight, who is the new NXT Women's Champion. And then they're going to show Colin O'Reilly after their match, some footage. Then MSK comes out, who are the new tag team champions, the former Rascals, Wesley and Nash Carter. And they are defending their titles against Killian Dane and Drake Maverick, who beat Fandango and Tyler Breeze the night, or the second night of NXT TakeOver to get this shot. I never thought that Killian Dane and Drake Maverick were going to win it. MSK is a really fun tag team right now. I think NXT is really behind them. So they got the win over Drake Maverick. Fun little, 10.5-minute match. I'd give it 3 stars. It was fun. I think with ratings that the best thing to do is I think that the ratings can get higher if I feel like either guy can win. I think that that's one thing, and I just didn't buy Dane and Maverick winning at all. After the match, Alexander Wolf comes out and just stares at Killian Dane, and we've been seeing a lot of this, actually. A lot of Imperium hanging around with Wolf, Marcel Barthel, and Fabian Aichner. Walters even come over. I don't know if they're trying to maybe reunite Ringkampf, because I believe they used to have Timothy Thatcher. I'm not sure about Killian Dane, but Imperium just attacks Killian Dane, and that was the end of that. So we'll see where they're going with this whole Imperium thing. Ever since they lost the titles, they've been kind of floundering. So then we got Robert Stone and Aaliyah in the back, and Robert Stone wants to get them tag team title shots. You know, whatever. What have they done? They've never even won. This Robert Stone thing is just, I don't know. They got to do something with this. He's just coming off as comedy fodder. Mercedes Martinez walks up and says, "You owe me money." And Jesse Kamea comes out and challenges her. So we have that match. Then we came back from break, and we had Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly footage from after TakeOver, which was them both being gurneyed out, and Adam Cole yelling at Kyle O'Reilly, saying pretty much this isn't over, and, you know, hopefully it's not over. I was not a fan of their unsanctioned match. Sorry, I'm yawning. I'm still getting over this whole COVID side effects stuff. It's just so the unsanctioned match was just, it didn't, the amount of time it got, all this stuff, it should have been divvied up more between the show. I thought that they could have had a really fun 25-minute match instead of like an over 40-minute match. So, looks like they're going to be sticking with this feud for a while. Maybe we'll find out more next week. Mercedes Martinez versus Jesse Kamea. This one was, in my mind, never in doubt. Mercedes Martinez got the win in a little over a minute. Can't rate it. I can't rate a match. That's only a minute, like a minute and a half. Actual time was a minute 37. Kind of funny, so... then Martinez pretty much says that she's coming after Raquel Gonzalez. So we'll see where that goes. Mercedes Martinez has not really had any sort of run with any of the titles. She hasn't been put in, she was in that triple threat with Toni Storm and... EO. So I don't know. She just comes off as old to me. I'd have to look up to see exactly how old Mercedes Martinez is, but she just comes off as older to me. And I just don't think she needs to be in NXT. I think she needs to be up on the main roster. And I think she was for a few minutes as part of the stupid Retribution thing. So then we got a little interview in the back with The Way and what's her name, Indy Hartwell is pretty much saying that she can't wait to get in the ring with Dexter Lumis, so something is obviously brewing there. Then we had an open challenge from Santos Escobar, which is answered by Kushida. And what a fantastic TV match. It didn't jump into the four-star territory for me. But after Escobar's big win in that title match against Jordan Devlin, the Irish Ace, on night two of TakeOver, he comes out and Kushida actually knocks him off. So, and I believe Escobar had been the champion since maybe June. So, I mean, he got a nice long run, almost, probably about 10 months with that title. So Kushida gets a pin, gets his first title. Fantastic. I'll give it a little over 3 stars. I'll go 3.25 stars on this match at a little over 11 minutes. It was a big win that I didn't expect. I think that both men really worked clean and crisp. And Kushida's win, I think it creates an instant feud for the title. So, you know, I'm all for that. And Kushida celebrates afterwards, of course. Then we have Tommaso Ciampa and Timothy Thatcher, who are backstage, and they're talking about the fact that they've been able to hang around, and Imperium tested their will. Ciampa pretty much says he lost to Walter. Yeah, it was a fun match. They don't win every fight, but they pass every test, he says. And then they say, or they tell MSK that they're coming for them. So who knows, maybe we get a Ciampa and Thatcher versus MSK feud. That'd be pretty fun. Lots of different styles there, actually. So that'd be really fun. Then we had Raquel and Dakota coming out for an interview. They're just walking to the stage. Then they actually cut over to Kushida, and Jordan Devlin pretty much walks in, congratulates him, saying he's got to go back to Europe, but he'll be back for his title. Says that a ladder match doesn't show who the better wrestler is, which I agree with. So, that could be something we could look forward to in the future. Dakota Kai welcomes Raquel Gonzalez to the ring. Raquel says she worked her ass off for the title. This was just a pretty much like congratulations to the title. She got the "You Deserve It" chant from the minimal people there. And then we had actually the debut of Frankie Monet, the old Taya Valkyrie. It's loca time, as you can say. She comes down with her pooch and says she's La Huera Loca. So she says it's the best division on this planet now because she's there. And, pretty much just introduces herself to the crowd. Then Raquel says that she's lucky she's in a good mood because if she interrupted her again, she'd shove the dog up her ass. So I like Raquel Gonzalez. I wasn't big on her when she first came into NXT, but she's actually gotten a pretty nice little monster character, and pretty much going over to the face side here, which that's the only thing I'm a little weirded out about. Then Rhea Ripley comes out and Bianca Belair. They show a picture of all three of them together back in NXT. Now they all are holding all the women's gold in the company. So they all hug and do a photo op. So I don't have any complaints about it. It was a nice little segment and introduced Frankie Monet. So we'll see where that goes. Then Pete Dunne pretty much says that he's the best technical wrestler in the world. And if anyone from any brand wants to test him, to go ahead and do that. But other than that, he wants to focus on championship gold. Then we had a short little vignette with Regal, Meiko Sakamura, I believe is her name, and Simon Inoki introducing Sarray. And they're actually positioning her as a successor to Asuka, Io, and Kairi Sane. And she's going to debut next week. Then we got a little match with Leon Ruff and Isaiah Swerve Scott. It was, probably like the third or fourth time these guys have gone back and forth. See, this is where NXT is just getting a little lazy to me. It's coming off like WWE. They just keep having these guys wrestle the same guys in and out instead of having like the real big pay-per-view payoffs for them, which I think Swerve and Leon Ruff could have a great takeover match. Isaiah Swerve Scott goes over in a little over 11 minutes. I gave it about 2.5 stars. There was lots of action and fast-paced stuff, but there was some sloppy botches in there that hurt the match. But it was enjoyable. Then we had Zoe Stark in the back. She pretty much talks about how she beat Toni Storm, and her ultimate goal is the NXT Women's title. Mercedes Martinez interrupts and says she's in line, not some rookie, and Stark says, we'll see about that. So maybe we'll get those two in a match next week. Seems to be the way they're going. And then we had a 8-person tag for the last match of the night. But before, Mackenzie's in the back with Isaiah Swerve Scott and asks if the feud with Ruff is over. And Swerve says he made a statement, and then Ruff charges in and attacks more. He says it's not over until he says it's over. Okay, so I'm getting down. I got a few minutes left here. Then we had the main event, which was The Way, Johnny Gargano, Austin Theory, Indy Hartwell, and Candice LeRae versus Bronson Reed, Dexter Lumis, Shotzi Blackheart, and Ember Moon. It was a fun little match. Some of the bullshit that was in it was... this whole thing with Indy Hartwell and Dexter Lumis. Indy Hartwell pretty much plays dead and wants Dexter Lumis to like carry her out. And so she's in love with Dexter Lumis. The Way doesn't really know what the hell's going on. So both those two left the match. And it came down to Gargano, LeRae, and Austin Theory versus Shotzi, Ember, and Bronson Reed. And Reed ended up pinning Austin Theory with the tsunami. It was chaotic. It was wacky. A lot of fun. The storyline stuff with Indy and Dexter is silly. But, I mean, it's fun silly, I guess. The in-ring action was good, all in all. So I give it, 2.75 stars, a little over 10 minutes. So, and at the end, just Bronson Reed is celebrating with the women's tag champs. So that's the NXT review. We're going to have another episode here on Saturday where I review AEW Dynamite from this week, which was on April 14th. And then I will review SmackDown from April... I think it would be the 16th at that point. So I look forward to doing another one and maybe hopefully get this all these COVID side effects out of my system so I don't sound terrible. But thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.